Chapter 9. When they reached the hotel, Bussier was waiting for them on the open veranda. He led Bruce aside and spoke quietly. "Monsieur, I don't wish to be an alarmist, but I have received some most disturbing news. There are brigands armed with modern weapons raiding down from the north. The last reports state that they had sacked Senwati Mission about 300 kilometers north of here."
"Yes," Bruce nodded. "I know about them. We heard on the radio."
"Then you will have realized that they can be expected to arrive here very soon.
I don't see them arriving before tomorrow afternoon. By then we should be well on our way to Msapa Junction."
"I hope you are right, monsieur. The atrocities committed by this General Moses at Senwati are beyond the conception of any normal mind. He appears to bear an almost pathological hatred for all people of European descent."
Bussier hesitated before going on.
"There were a dozen white nuns at Senwati. I have heard that they..."
"Yes," Bruce interrupted him quickly. He did not want to listen to it. "I can imagine. Try and prevent these stories circulating amongst your people. I don't want to have them panic."
"Of course," Bussier nodded.
"Do you know what force this General Moses commands?"
"It is not more than 100 men, but as I have said, they are all armed with modern weapons. I have even heard that they have with them a cannon of some description, though I think this is unlikely. They are travelling in a convoy of stolen vehicles, and at Senwati they captured a gasoline tanker belonging to the commercial oil companies."
"I see," mused Bruce. "But it doesn't alter my decision to remain here overnight. However, we must leave at first light tomorrow."
"As you wish, Captain."
"Now, monsieur," Bruce changed the subject, "I require some form of transport. Is that car in running order?"
He pointed at a pale green Ford Ranchero station wagon parked beside the veranda wall.
"It is. It belongs to my company."
Bussier took a key ring from his pocket and handed it to Bruce.
"Here are the keys. The tank is full of gasoline."
"Good," said Bruce. "Now, if we can find Madame Cartier..." She was waiting in the hotel lounge, and she stood up as Bruce and Bussier came in.
"Are you ready, madame?"
"I await your pleasure," she answered, and Bruce looked at her sharply. Just a trace of a twinkle in her dark blue eyes suggested that she was aware of the double meaning. They walked out to the Ford, and Bruce opened the door for her.
"You are gracious, monsieur."
She thanked him and slid into the seat. Bruce went round to the driver's side and climbed in beside her.
"It's nearly dark," he said. "Turn right on to the Msapa Junction Road. There is one post there."
Bruce drove out along the dirt road through the town until they came to the last house before the causeway.
"Here," said the girl, and Bruce stopped the car.
There were two men there, both armed with sporting rifles. Bruce spoke to them. They had seen no sign of Baluba, but they were both very nervous. Bruce made a decision.
"I want you to go back to the hotel. The Baluba will have seen the train arrive. They won't attack in force. We will be safe tonight. But they may try and cut a few throats if we leave you out here."
The two half-breeds gathered together their belongings and set off towards the centre of town, obviously with lighter hearts.
"Where are the others?" Bruce asked the girl.
"The next post is at the pumping station down by the river. There are three men there."
Bruce followed her directions. Once or twice as he drove, he glanced surreptitiously at her. She sat in her corner of the seat with her legs drawn up sideways under her. She sat very still, Bruce noticed.
"I like a woman who doesn't fidget. It's soothing."
Then she smiled.
"This one isn't soothing. She's as disturbing as hell." She turned suddenly and caught him looking again, but this time she smiled.
"You are English, aren't you, Captain?"
"No, I'm a Rhodesian,"
Bruce answered.
"It's the same," said the girl.
"You speak French so very badly that you had to be English."
Bruce laughed.
"Perhaps your English is better than my French," he challenged her.
"It couldn't be much worse," she answered him in his own language.
"You are different when you laugh, not so grim, not so heroic. Take the next road to your right."
Bruce turned the Ford down towards the harbour.
"You are very frank," he said. "Also, your English is excellent." "Do you smoke?" she asked, and when he nodded, she lit two cigarettes and passed one to him. "You are also very young to smoke, and very young to be married." She stopped smiling and swung her legs off the seat. "Here is the pumping station," she said. "I beg your pardon, I shouldn't have said that." "It's of no importance." "It was an impertinence," Bruce demurred. "It doesn't matter." Bruce stopped the car and opened his door. He walked out onto the wooden jetty towards the pump house, and the boards rang dully under his boots. There was a mist coming up out of the reeds round the harbour, and the frogs were piping in 50 different keys. He spoke to the men in the single room of the pump station. "You can get back to the hotel by dark if you hurry."
"Oui, monsieur," they agreed.
Bruce watched them set off up the road before he went to the car. He spun the starter motor, and above the noise of it, the girl asked, "What is your given name, Captain Kai?"
"Bruce."
She repeated it, pronouncing it Bruce, and then asked, "Why are you a soldier?"
"For many reasons."
His tone was flippant.
"You do not look like a soldier, for all your badges and your guns, for all the grimness and the frequent giving of orders."
"Perhaps I'm not a very good soldier," he smiled at her.
"You are very efficient and very grim, except when you laugh."
"But I'm glad you do not look like one," she said.
"Where's the next post?"
"On the railway line. There are two men there. Turn to your right again at the top, Bruce."
"You are also very efficient, Germain."
They were silent again, having used each other's names. Bruce could feel it between them, a good feeling, warm like new bread. "But what of her husband?" he thought. "I wonder where he is and what he is like. Why isn't he here with her?"
"He is dead," she said quietly. "He died 4 months ago of malaria."
With the shock of it, Germain answering his unspoken question, and also the answer itself, Bruce could say nothing for a moment, then, "I'm sorry."
"There is the post," she said, "in the cottage with the thatched roof."
Bruce stopped the car and switched off the engine. In the silence, she spoke again. "He was a good man, so very gentle. I only knew him for a few months, but he was a good man."
She looked very small, sitting beside him in the gathering dark, with the sadness on her, and Bruce felt a great wave of tenderness wash over him. He wanted to put his arm round her and hold her, to shield her from the sadness. He searched for the words, but before he found them, she roused herself and spoke in a matter-of-fact tone. "We must hurry. It's dark already." At the hotel, the lounge was filled with Bussier's employees. Haig had mounted a Bren in one of the upstairs windows to cover the main street, and posted two men in the kitchens to cover the back. The civilians were in little groups, talking quietly, and their expressions of complete dog-like trust as they looked at Bruce disconcerted him.
"Everything under control, Mike?" he asked brusquely.
"Yes, Bruce. We should be able to hold this building against a sneak attack. The Surrey and Hendry down at the station yard shouldn't have any trouble either.
Have these people," Bruce pointed at the civilians, "loaded their luggage?"
"Yes, it's all aboard. I've told Ruffy to issue them with food from our stores."
"Good."
Bruce felt relief. No further complications so far.
"Where is old man Bussier?"
"He's across at his office."
"I'm going to have a chat with him."
Unbidden, Germain fell in beside Bruce as he walked out into the street. But he liked having her there. Bussier looked up as Bruce and Germain walked into his office. The merciless glare of the Petromax lamp accentuated the lines at the corners of his eyes and mouth, and showed up the streaks of pink scalp beneath his neatly combed hair.
"Martin, you are not still working?" exclaimed Germain.
And he smiled at her, the calm smile of his years.
"Not really, my dear, just tidying up a few things. Please be seated, Captain."
He came round and cleared a pile of heavy leather-bound ledgers off the chair and packed them into a wooden case on the floor, went back to his own chair, opened a drawer in the desk, brought out a box of cheroots, and offered one to Bruce.
"I cannot tell you how relieved I am that you are here, Captain.
These last few months have been very trying. The doubt, the anxiety.
He struck a match and held it out to Bruce, who leaned forward across the desk and lit his cheroot.
But now it is all at an end. I feel as though a great weight has been lifted from my shoulders.
Then his voice sharpened.
But you were not too soon. I have heard within the last hour that this General Moses and his column have left Senwati and are on the road south, only 200 kilometers north of here. They will arrive tomorrow at their present rate of advance.
Where did you hear this? Bruce demanded.
From one of my men, and do not ask me how he knows.
There is a system of communication in this country which even after all these years I do not understand.
Perhaps it is the drums.
I heard them this evening. I do not know.
However, their information is usually reliable.
I had not placed them so close, muttered Bruce.
Had I known this, I might have risked travelling tonight, at least as far as the bridge.
I think your decision to stay over the night was correct. General Moses will not travel during darkness. None of his men would risk that. And the condition of the road from Senwati after 3 months of neglect is such that he will need 10 or 12 hours to cover the distance.
I hope you're right. Bruce was worried. I'm not sure that we shouldn't pull out now.
That involves a risk also, Captain, Bussier pointed out. We know there are tribesmen in close proximity to the town. They have been seen. They must be aware of your arrival, and might easily have ripped the lines to prevent our departure. I think your original decision is still good.
I know.
Bruce was hunched forward in his chair, frowning, sucking on the cheroot. At last he sat back and the frown evaporated. I can't risk it. I'll place a guard on the causeway, and if this Moses gentleman arrives, we can hold him there long enough to embark your people.
That is probably the best course, agreed Bussier.
He paused, glanced towards the open windows, and lowered his voice.
There is another point, Captain, which I wish to bring to your attention.
Yes?
As you know, the activity of my company in Port-Reprieve is centered on the recovery of diamonds from the Lufira swamps.
Bruce nodded.
I have in my safe, Bussier jerked his thumb at the heavy steel door built into the wall behind his desk, 9,500 carats of gem-quality diamonds, and some 26,000 carats of industrial diamonds.
I had expected that. Bruce kept his tone non-committal.
It may be as well if we could agree on the disposition and handling of these stones.
How are they packaged? Asked Bruce.
A single wooden case.
Of what size and weight?
I will show you.
Bussier went to the safe, turned his back to them, and they heard the tumblers whir and click. While he waited, Bruce realized suddenly that Charmaine had not spoken since her initial greeting to Bussier. He glanced at her now, and she smiled at him. I like a woman who knows when to keep her mouth shut. Bussier swung the door of the safe open and carried a small wooden case across to the desk.
There, he said.
Bruce examined it. 18 inches long, 9 deep and 12 wide. He lifted it experimentally. About 20 pounds weight, he decided.
The lid is sealed.
Yes, agreed Bussier, touching the 4 wax imprints.
Good, Bruce nodded. I don't want to draw unnecessary attention to it by placing a guard upon it.
No, I agree. Bruce studied the case a few seconds longer, then he asked, "What is the value of these stones?"
Bussier shrugged.
"Possibly 500 million francs." And Bruce was impressed. 500,000 sterling. Worth stealing. Worth killing for.
I suggest, monsieur, that you secrete this case in your luggage, in your blanket, say. I doubt there'll be any danger of theft until we reach Msapa Junction. A thief will have no avenue of escape. Once we reach Msapa Junction, I will make other arrangements for its safety.
Very well, Captain. Bruce stood up and glanced at his watch.
7 o'clock, as near as damn it. I will leave you and see to the guard on the causeway. Please make sure that your people are ready to entrain before dawn tomorrow morning.
Of course.
Bruce looked at Charmaine, and she stood up quickly.
Bruce held the door open for her and was just about to follow her when a thought struck him.
That mission station, St. Augustine's, is it? I suppose it's deserted now?
No, it's not.
Broussier looked a little shamefaced. Father Ignatius is still there, and of course the patients at his hospital.
Thanks for telling me. Bruce was bitter.
I'm sorry, Captain. It slipped my mind. There are so many things to think of.
Do you know the road out to the mission? He snapped at Charmaine. She should have told him.
Yes, Bruce.
Well, perhaps you'd be good enough to direct me.
Of course.
She also looked guilty. Bruce slammed the door of Boussier's office and strode off towards the hotel, with Charmaine trotting to keep pace with him. You can't rely on anyone, he thought. Not anybody. And then he saw Ruffy coming up from the station, looking like a big bear in the dusk. With a few exceptions, Bruce corrected himself.
Sergeant Major.
Hello, boss.
This General Moses is closer to us than we reckoned. He's reported 200 kilometres north of here on the Senwati Road.
Ruffy whistled through his teeth.
Are you going to take off now, boss?
No. I want a machine gun post on this end of the causeway. If they come, we can hold them there long enough to get away. I want you to take command.
I'll see to it now.
I'm going out to the mission. There's a white priest there. Lieutenant Haig is in command while I'm away.
Okay, boss.